got ready to do the show tonight, I knew that we'd be talking with Bruce D. Thatcher. He's author of the book Adamant Aggressors, How to Recognize and Deal with Them. He served in the U.S. Navy and the United States Marine Corps Reserves. And he's a guy who clearly and very loudly states that, formal history education in the country today doesn't include anything that resembles concise, practical lessons for what we're dealing with in the world. And that's a point with which I agree, which got me thinking about the many challenges that, we face today from perceived threats in Iran and North Korea and, elsewhere. And the goal that I wanted to accomplish was to ask point blank how we today spot the current adamant aggressors, the next Hitler or next Stalin, and what we as a country should do about it. Bruce D. Thatcher, welcome to the Night Talker Show.
Oh, it's great to be here.
Appreciate it. You know, I've got to ask you, what does the D stand for, your middle initial?
The D is Donald. The publisher wanted it on the book. I don't usually use it.
Well, you know what, my friend? I'm not going to use it either, because as we were leading up to doing the show today, I usually ask people what the middle name is, and I realized in your case, I didn't. Listen, as we jump into this interview, I flash back to some of the old newsreels that I've seen of the Nazis going around Dom Square in Amsterdam or standing in the courtyard at Prague Castle. And those are streets that I've walked, and I've walked many times. And for our friends that have been in Prague or been in Amsterdam, much of the scenery looks exactly, almost exactly the same as it did in the 1940s as the Nazis marched through. And we look at those pictures now and wonder, how in the heck did this happen? And could it happen again? And I think, Bruce, your answer would be, yes, it definitely could happen again, right?
Oh, I think very definitely it can happen to us, and it can happen to others, particularly others with whom we are allied in some fashion or other. There are people who are or desire to be adamant aggressors probably at all times through history. And what I found in studying them is that they have some fairly common characteristics. They can be identified. For instance, first, we need to understand that not all aggressors are adamant. Some aggressors are people legitimately pursuing the interests of their nation or negotiating for the best deals they can get.
Right.
But an adamant aggressor is a person obsessed with obtaining inflexible, unchangeable goals, and they'll use any means to do it. They have three things that are in common. They always have a clear long-term goal. Long-term is critical to understand, and that goal will, one, diminish our well-being if they achieve it or attempt to. That goal is unchanging. They're not going to change it. It doesn't, over time, it's fixed. They're obsessed with it, and they're willing to do anything. They firmly believe that the end justifies the means. Mm-hmm. If you get somebody who fits all of those elements, then they'll behave as an adamant aggressor.
How did we in the West, and by we, this was before I was born, of course, and certainly before a good many of the people listening were born, but how did we miss Hitler? I mean, in retrospect, that seems so obvious, but it was missed.
Well, it's, you know, in retrospect is 2020. There were a lot of things going on. Everybody was tired and worn out from World War One. They didn't want to deal with such things. We in the United States went into an isolationist kind of mode. We didn't want to be involved with Europe's problems, and so we tended to shut our eyes to what went on over there and just stay disengaged. The major players were France, particularly, and Great Britain. And those people, I guess I'd say they were in denial. They didn't want to believe that they would have to fight another war again. And politically, they couldn't. The French people and the British people had lost millions of young men in World War One, and they just didn't want to think about it. So Hitler begins gaining power, and he begins doing things that we now can recognize as clear signs of an adamant aggressor. And those countries tended to say, well, maybe he's just wanting to get a little bit of prestige back for Germany, or maybe he's just trying to get what really is rightfully his. Germany had been forced into a very onerous settlement with the Versailles Treaty, and Germans were certainly resentful of that, and people in Britain and in France also, many of them said that wasn't really fair. It was the Roaring Twenties. People were having a great time. They didn't want to deal with it. And history is messy. It's hard to see what's going on when you're in the forest.
Mm-hmm. You know, a moment ago you talked about adamant aggressors being obsessed with a long-term goal. And can that be both obsessed personally because they're megalomaniacs and obsessed with what they see as their national identity? Or is it more focused on themselves and their own power? I mean, Hitler, I think, was very much obsessed with himself, was he not?
He was, and in my book I've got examples of both. Hitler was absolutely, he was personally obsessed with being absolute dictator of
right.
everything. That was the case with Hitler. That was the case less so maybe with Stalin, but one of my examples is James K. Polk. He was obsessed with what he viewed as the manifest destiny that he saw for America.
Right.
So you're right. It's not just personal. They're not all psychotic. Although there may be elements of psychosis for many of them.
Right. You know, and this concept of adamant aggressor, which I must tell you, the concept is one that I understand, and I think I've always understood, not as clearly as you outline it in your book, but it's something that has interested me over a period of time, yet I had never put those words together. How did you hit on this as a concept?
Well, I was trying to... I'll go back a step. I for many years in business, which is where I spent my life, I was concerned and pondered why we don't learn from history. I'm sure most of your listeners have asked themselves that same question. Why don't we learn from history? Because
right.
we keep doing the same things over and over again. And so I decided to see if I could take some history and turn it into actual lessons that got taught. And I needed to find an example. And one of the kind of no-brainer examples was Hitler. I said, my gosh, here's a case where all of the signs were there and we did all the wrong things, we meaning non-Hitler, non-Nazis,
mm-hmm.
and there ought to be a good lesson there. And then once I got into that idea, I thought, well, there's other people. Like, I can't just have one case. Let's see if there are other people. And along the way, somehow or other, I came up with the idea as, well, I'm talking about aggressors, and then, but not just any aggressor. The ones that are really dangerous are the ones that you can't talk off their goal. And so I just kind of evolved finally the adjective adamant to put in front of that term.
Mm-hmm.
And look through history for other examples.
Now, did you yourself coin that phrase, adamant aggressor?
Yes.
Yeah, well, sir, I salute you for that, and that's something that I hope history remembers you for. Now, to your knowledge, is this concept being taught within the State Department, within the Foreign Service in the United States?
I don't have any knowledge specifically of what they're teaching in the State Department or the Foreign Service in any way, but as I observe what we're doing, I have the feeling it's not.
Yeah, as I've gotten into your book, and as you and I have talked off air, and had some, for me, would have been very interesting discussions, I think, with you leading the way and teaching me, it seems to me that these are very important concepts that we have to start thinking about. In the remaining minute or so of this segment of the show, what are the lessons from the past that living memory that apply directly to some of the things we're facing today?
Oh, I think that Al-Qaeda and 9/11 provide a very current example, because Osama bin Laden. Osama bin Laden displayed all of the characteristics of an adamant aggressor, and the signs, as we found since then, were there, and we didn't connect the dots.
Mm-hmm.
And he also has demonstrated with Al-Qaeda that one of the few ways you stop adamant aggressors is you either have to convince them they can't succeed, genuinely can't succeed, or they have to die. He died. We killed him. And in that, that's a very current example. Al-Qaeda, their goal was a worldwide caliphate. The last such thing was the Ottoman Empire, which ended after World War I and finished with the establishment of Turkey in 1924. But a worldwide caliphate obviously would impinge on the well-being of our way of life if it were to ever take place.
Well, yeah, Bruce, no, this is fascinating stuff, and I want to get into that a little bit deeper when we come back from this break. I also want to ask our guests, Bruce Thatcher, Bruce D. Thatcher on the book, other people that maybe we need to watch out for now, and how can or should the world respond? I'm Michael David McGuire, and this is the Night Talker Show here on the Night Talker Radio Network. Our guest this hour is Bruce D. Thatcher, and just before the break, we were talking about his book, Adamant Aggressors, How to Recognize and Deal with Them. And Bruce, I must say I find your premise and your work to be very well thought out, very well articulated, and really important. First of all, Bruce, welcome back to the Night Talker Show.
Thank you.
Well, what set you on this path to write this book? Was that your work in business years ago?
Well, I've evolved into an interest in history, and particularly, as I mentioned, related to why don't we learn from history. I spent my life in business in a consulting firm that my wife and I started, and in that business and taught some courses as an adjunct at local colleges in the Kansas City area where we lived at the time, and I realized that business education was essentially history in the form of cases.
Mm-hmm.
So that got me thinking that maybe the reason that history, we don't learn history, is because it isn't taught in a way that we would retain it and learn it. And that caused me to say, let me see if I can apply a business studies or case approach to history, focused on the lessons rather than the who, what, when, where, and why of some period in time.
Right. What sort of reaction have you received based on your work, your book, from government? A reaction, no reaction, resistance?
None whatsoever.
Yeah.
I have tried to bring it to the attention of a few officials or people involved in government, and they I don't get any response.
Yeah, and that is surprising to me. You know, lots of people have lots of ideas, and some of them are pretty goofy ideas. They get an awful lot of sensational media coverage, and your book, Adamant Aggressors, strikes me as something that could get that type of sensational coverage, but at a very important time in the nation's history. You know, there was something that I saw in one of your articles or written material, and I love this line. I pulled it out. It says, time is of the essence. It's easier and less costly to deal with adamant aggressors sooner rather than later. And it seems like, Bruce, that's been a common theme throughout the history of mankind.
It is, because, and there's some examples of it, obviously, in the book. Hitler could have been dispatched with almost without firing a shot in 1936 when he marched into the Rhineland.
Right.
And France chose not to do anything. Had he been, you can even look at some earlier times, back at the time of the beer hall putsch, he was convicted of sedition. The law of Bavaria said that required a life sentence in prison. They gave him 5 years and let him out after 9 months or something like that.
Right, and he wrote Mein Kampf during that period of time.
In which he told us exactly what he was going to do.
Yeah, and that's the thing that I think is just astounding to me, is that people were not listening. And Mein Kampf, the English translation and also in the original German, was fairly well read. You know, before the last break, I also indicated that I wanted to ask you, who do you see on the horizon now that you, based on your theories, would identify as an adamant aggressor?
I think that, and understand, I haven't studied them specifically in depth, but I think that in Iran, the supreme leader, Khomeini,
mm-hmm.
would probably qualify for. And we don't hear much about Khomeini. We hear about the president of Iran, who is a figurehead, does not have the power. But I think that Khomeini is probably an adamant aggressor. But one that we don't ever hear about, and I think is potentially very significant, is in Saudi Arabia, the House of Saud, probably King Abdullah, or maybe the Crown Prince now. Those are the people, through the Wahhabis, who are financing radical, very radical Islamic imams that they send to the United States to preach in the mosques here.
Mm-hmm.
The point of view of their brand of Islam is one of world dominance and world government, and their point of view is absolutely very long term. And I think there's a real need to be looking very carefully at those people and try to figure out exactly what they're about.
What's your take on North Korea?
North Korea is, Kim Jong-il, his father, and undoubtedly his son, are adamant aggressors, and their target is South Korea. Their target is not the United States, but South Korea is in our sphere of interest, and South Korea, it is, I think, to our interest not to allow South Korea to be taken over by the communists of North Korea, and therefore we have to be concerned about them. And North Korea also, in the last several years, provides clear examples of how not to deal with adamant aggressors. Our approach to negotiating and concessions has proved to be totally ineffective and has, if anything, reinforced their belief that they can survive whatever's going on and continue on with their goals.
Yeah, the example that you cite with North Korea, where they do something naughty and we're going to spank them, and we don't spank them and give them candy.
That's right.
It's a bad analogy, I guess, but it's in very simple terms. It's very much what we did with the Hitler, with going into the Rhineland, or the Anschluss with Austria, things that in hindsight were so incredibly stupid. How should we deal with these threats? I mean, I know one of the things you say in the book is we need to clearly articulate our key national interests.
Mm-hmm. Long-term interests. We use, and our government uses the term our interests, but rarely spell them out in such unambiguous terms that they cannot be misunderstood, particularly by our potential enemies. They're done vaguely, in my opinion, deliberately, to not offend anybody. And that makes them mushy, and that makes them so that nobody knows for sure what we mean, which makes it easy for us to back off and not actually defend our interests.
And Bruce, don't you find that that when things are wishy-washy like that, it ultimately just makes the situation worse?
Absolutely, because we can then justify just about any concession. I hate to use the Chamberlain example of peace in our time. What we call that now is kicking the can down the road. And any concession, one of the guidelines for dealing with an adamant aggressor is that any concession made to an adamant aggressor reinforces that man's belief in ultimate success. So we need to have a really good, and it guarantees renewed conflict down the road at some point. So there needs to be a really clear short-term reason for making a concession. And yet we do it all the time, and we make ambiguous threats and don't follow through on them. All of those things strengthen people who are adamant aggressors.
You know, if by some magic phone call tomorrow you were put in charge of a section of the educational department at the State Department, I mean, and that's, you and I both know that's not going to happen, but well, if it does, then you call me tomorrow and let me know. But
I will.
Yeah, Hillary especially, if she calls. But what would you put into place? I mean, in our final minute of the show, what would be the three things that you would do right off the bat to strengthen that educational department?
Well, I would teach or a seminar on adamant aggressors. I would make sure that people understood the rules and the history about adamant aggressors, and then I would as lessons in the class, I would require them to identify the adamant aggressors all over the world that we were dealing with through our State Department contacts, and I'd give them that homework and say, okay, how do they fit or not fit? And then I would require them to suggest what effective things. I'd start out by requiring them to list all the things, all the guidelines that tell them what they should not do.
Mm-hmm.
If we can avoid doing the things that have been proven wrong, we may not end up at the best result, but at least we'll end up at a better result.
A better result, yes. Well, friends, our guest is Bruce D. Thatcher. The book is Adamant Aggressors, subtitled How to Recognize and Deal with Them. In the final 10 seconds, Bruce, what's next on your plate? What's your next project?
I am in the process of writing another book, similarly formatted, on immigration. I'm probably about 80% through it.
I laugh because you're really tackling the easy subjects, aren't you?
Yeah. Right.
Well, good luck with that. And your website, quickly, historyspeakstoday.com, correct?
Correct.
And the book, once again, at Amazon.com, Barnes & Noble, Adamant Aggressors, our guest, Bruce D. Thatcher. Bruce, thanks for being on the Night Talker Show.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.